Bienvenue dans Entourage, un podcast dédié aux talents qui œuvrent dans l'ombre de vos idoles. Moi, c'est Dasset, DJ, auteur-compositeur et manager-producteur d'artistes internationaux. Je vous entraîne à travers mon podcast dans les coulisses du succès. Comment gérer une star du rap, un acteur ou un footballeur de renommée nationale, voire mondiale? Pour y répondre, j'invite chaque semaine des managers, avocats, agents, bref, l'entourage des stars, afin d'en savoir plus sur la face cachée de leur réussite. Cette masterclass hebdomadaire sur le leadership inspirera celles et ceux qui veulent exceller au quotidien dans l'accompagnement et la gestion des talents. Bonne écoute. Afrika Bambaataa, welcome in Entourage.
Oh, it's definitely a privilege to be here and to be on your show with you. And to all my brothers and sisters in the great Le Francais, I'm sorry for all the problems that's going on there now, but keep the spirit alive. God is great.
God is great indeed. So yeah, obviously I wanted to, you know, have you on the show because basically everyone was inspired in France by you know, this guy that you know very well, who's Sydney, you know, Sydney, who came up with the first hip-hop TV show in the world in France. He inspired basically all the hip-hop scene down here in Paris. And even before that, you made him the first, you know, Zulu in France. So, you know, I thought I had to have you on the show because you're the originator of all that movement. So let's go for, you know, for your story. And we don't want to miss anything. So this going great details. So it all started in the Bronx. Is that right?
Yep, it started in the great Bronx, New York. When we was over there with the great mighty Sydney when he had the Ashiope hip hop great show that started it all in Le Francais.
Way before that, you started in the Bronx. So you were born and raised there. How was it growing up in the Bronx?
Well, it was great growing up in the Bronx. I mean, you had your ups and downs. You had things just coming out of the civil rights and the human rights movement. And you had many things that was changing in the Bronx, you know, coming through the street. And, you know, you had your block parties where you had bands playing. Then once we started getting to the new thing called DJing, then that's when we started taking over for the block parties and playing for the people, by the people, young and old, old and young, and playing good music for the people and trying to get people to organize and get together and do things in the community besides just partying.
Yeah, so the amazing thing right here is that you were part of a gang, so the Black Spades, right? So how did you even get involved in the gangs in the first place?
Well, we had a time era when a lot of street organizations was running around at the time. So you had many groups from the Black Spades, Savage Nomads, Seven Mortals, the Reapers and the Javelins and many other groups that was out there at the time. And one of the groups that I was with was the Black Spades, another group called Power Browns, another one, the Young Nomads. So we was, you know, in part of these groups and some of the situations and things that they was into at the time. But the Black Spades was definitely a powerful organization that was not just playing around gang fighting, but it was also cleaning up certain parts of the areas of their community, like keeping people, you know, in check, helping the parents and stuff when they got to get upstairs for certain situations and things like that.
So from what I get, the gangs was some of a positive thing still and not all negative, right?
Right. You have some that, you know, depends on what leaders you had, those that think with positivity and also those that could get negative when it's time to get negative. So you had the yin and the yang, the agreeable and the disagreeable at the same time.
Indeed. And at some point you became, well, let's say, a big figure in the gang community as the Black Spade became the biggest gang of New York.
Oh, yeah. So I was on the chapter by Cool DJD, which was the first chapter, first division. And we was into a lot of different other things before he decided to become one of the first people to start DJing with equipment out there. Because we also was part of this thing called the youth service movement, which they give you jobs in the summer times. And that's how some of us was getting some of our equipment from the money we made from there. Most people hear the story that a blackout happened and everybody just started robbing things. Nah, it didn't happen all like that. You had myself, you had Disco King Mario, you had Cool DJ G, you had Tex DJ Hollywood, You know, he had all us out there that was doing things in the black space that was DJs afterwards, after we did all our other earlier activities.
Right. You raised an interesting point. What do you think of all the, you know, the series and the movies made about the hip hop, you know, the rise of hip hop and how it started and, you know, the bad influences at the beginning. And, you know, what do you think of all these TV shows? How do they actually stick to reality, would you think?
Well, you got truth and forces strangely mixed. And we know why, because there's, you know, a lot has to deal with Hollywood and they got to look good for television and then some want to become a series and wants to see if they become a show that could go for a year or two. So, you know, that's how they do things in Hollywood. You know, they get it all niced up. They could get it certain part and make everybody think it's balanced. And one thing, they get it all niced up for the TV show to get more people to watch it. Same like your news story, the same thing like what's going on in France at the moment. Everybody thinks everything is what it says on the television with the news, but then they see it differently from what the street is talking.
Yes, most definitely. So what gets you to, you know, leave the gangs basically, you know, was that the turntables or something happened and then you decided, well, you know, that's enough for me now. I want to do something even bigger than that.
Well, you had people that was coming around the communities trying to teach many of the youth and many of the adults with some of their ideologies, like the ideologies of the Nation of Islam, the ideology of the Black Panther Party. You had the ideology of SNCC organization and NAACP and all these type of groups that might come by and have a certain talks or trying to speak to different gang leaders or gang groups or trying to get things organized in the community. You had city planning. You had certain adults that would come and try to speak to calm certain situations down.
So inspiring things happening still, and the hustle was real at the time, I'm guessing. And then you get into on the turntable, inspired by Kool Herc and DJ and Kool DJ D. How was your relationship with them?
Well, I was very close with Kool DJ D, and when Herc started coming out, we got close. After a while, you know, we used to be in competition, but then after a while, we became very good brothers to each other, and at that time, it was just basically when it came to the hip-hop culture that we started happening. It was just basically Kool Herc, myself, and then the Grandmaster Flash, and then many of the other rap groups that was coming out at the time, because it was all about the DJs at first. And then the MCs came on and was tearing it up. But then before that, you had your disco DJs, and you had your disco type of MCing, you know, like DJ Jones and DJ Hollywood and all those type of DJs that was happening at that time, the Disco Twins. And then when we came, Kool Herc, myself, Grandmaster Flash, that's when we put them beats and breaks and got that whole new sound that became that whole hip-hop culture. Adding the B-boys, the B-girls, the DJs, the MCs, the aerosol writers, and then became a whole culture under Universal Zulu Nation. And then from the Universal Zulu Nation, it stretched out to all the other different people to start their different types of hip-hop organizations.
Right. You're going super fast right now. We're trying to, you know, just slow it down and try to get into, you know, more details. You know, how do you, you know, from being on the turntable, on the mic, you know, and getting into hip-hop, how do you start and think about creating the Zulu Nation, you know, the Universal Zulu Nation? How does that come about?
Well, Universal Zulu Nation comes about on the heels of what was happening in the 60s and the 60s with the civil rights movement and the human rights movement, you know, with the talks of Malcolm X, Kwame Ture, better known at that time as Stokely Carmichael, hearing Marion Makeba when she was fighting for the apartheid freedom in South Africa, Angela Davis and Huey Newton and all of them in the Black Panther Party. So Universal Zulu Nation came from that type of thought of ideology that was coming at that time, hearing Malcolm X, Mr. Farrakhan, Ava Muhammad, Angela Davis, all these types of people that were speaking, trying to do things with their different organization. Thus seeing the movie Zulu and seeing that the Zulus was fighting for what was their land in South Africa, just had to, it hit me to say I got to start a group like that. And it started with the Zulu Nation, then the Almighty Zulu Nation, and as we got all around the different countries, the Universal Zulu Nation. Before that, it was called the Organization.
Exactly, exactly. But it all started when you won an essay contest, is that right? And you that earned you a trip to Africa?
I won the trip to Africa from the UNICEF.
Right. How does that come about?
That was taking a test on, you know, why would you want to go to these places? The first place I was supposed to go was India, but I missed that meeting. And I ended up winning it next year, and I got the trip to go to Africa and Europe at the time. And that was a exciting trip that changed my mind a lot. That's when I first came into Ivory Coast, Nigeria, and got into the music of the James Brown of Africa, the mighty fella, Ransom Kuti, which was his name at that time, and the Afrobeat movement. And I took his music and brought it back to the Americas and started playing a lot of the African music at the hip hop events like Shakara, Spencer Shit, and a lot of other songs by him. We had a dance called the Bus Stop, where many people have did it, you know, as the cowboy dance or the electric slide and all they call it today. And we used to dance to Fela Kuti music about 15 to 20 minutes of side song, just doing the bus stop on that dance. And it was amazing seeing many other people doing the same type steps and dance at a event to Fela Kuti's African music or Manuel Dibango, Soma Kosa music.
And then when you decide to actually, you know, create the movement, what's your surrounding like? How do you, you know, surround yourself in terms of, you know, do you have, you know, the gangs, what you have your generals and you have people, you know, helping you spread the word? How does that work?
Yeah, well, you still have your same people that you had in the youth gang organization movements, but then you try to get them thinking on a different level. You had some that would quit. You got others who start thinking like what needs to be done to get it to another level. The early part of Universal Zulu Nation was still very dangerous at the early days. But once you start adding them affinity lessons and teaching and speaking, and everybody start seeing a different way how they had to handle things in their community.
Right. And then you came to France in 1982, something like that. That's correct.
Yeah, 82. We came with the not Radio Nova.
Radio Nova. Radio. Oh, okay.
No, Radio Nova was after us. We came with Radio. What was the one? Well, I forgot the name of the main radio station.
Europe 1.
I think it was called Europe 1.
Oh, Europe 1. Was it Europe 1? Europe 1. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Wow. But how did you get, because Europe 1 is not known for you know, being very avant-garde or you know, creating the, you know, the trend. How did you come about and got invited by Europe 1?
Somebody set it up by the great, my people at Celluloid. What are you killing me for getting the name right now? He was a photographer. Yeah, he probably got to look at all that Radio Nova early days.
Yeah.
But a lot of them helped. They put the thing together, and we came and brought a lot of the DJs, MCs, some of the jump rope style, the B-boys, B-girls, Futura, Phase 2, a couple others, DST, and all us came over there, and we did the show down there in Paris, and left a mark on the people. And with myself, I just kept coming back, you know, helping with my brother Sydney and coming back with the Sonic and coming back and with Sydney and his band, becoming the Time Zone band, and then working with Lawrence Tweet and my girl Africa Laku, who also is one who started Yo MTV Raps, because many people keep thinking it's Fat Five Fetty, but it was Africa Laku from Paris.
Right.
France was definitely the first place that grabbed a hold of the culture quick and in a big way. That's why they had so many good artists, you know, from the French rappers and the French singers.
All right. So you're saying that France was outside of the US was like the next one to catch up with the culture.
Oh, yeah. They was definitely getting on big time. England was getting there, too. But France wasn't playing with it. especially when they did the show Hip Hop. And then everybody was coming there to play with some of the groups there, and others was catching on. And that's when you started getting MC Thola and all of them started coming in, and the Paris City Breakers and Queen Candy, who also started the first female president, also with Sydney, after Sydney, for the Universal Zoo Nation of France, and started the first newsletters, which I think some of them are going to be at the Hip Hop Museum, some of the early French newsletters and stuff.
Hip Hop Museum. We'll talk about the Hip Hop Museum a bit later. So what do you think of, have you followed the evolution of the French hip hop scene a bit since then?
Oh yeah, I loved a lot of the music that was coming out of France from the hip hop community to the R&B community, you know, like, you know, the Karens and MTM and all the other groups they had there, MC Solar. I was definitely still rocking to this day.
Hell yeah, still rocking to this day.
A wonderful show over there in Kemet, which is known as Egypt.
Right.
And plus with what is his name, Matt and the other ones that were singing with Cameron. I forgot some of their names, but there's a whole lot of groups. We had some Lone. I still play Lone music to this day.
Okay, you know your French music still.
Oh yeah. France wasn't playing around.
We still ain't.
I love the French music, even the wild one from what's the name, the one that made Andy Dulawi, Rita Mitsouko.
Rita Mitsouko, exactly. Yeah.
And then that girl when they had the sweet, nice music, Jolie Taxi.
Yes, Vanessa Paradis.
Yep, that record used to kill it at Bataclan. You know, when we used to play it there, people used to flood the dance floor.
Yeah, that was big. That was big at the time. So, yeah, tell me about, you know, your first big record, you know. How did it feel? And how did you know that, like, you know, this was a real turn in the culture, basically?
Well, I was looking at people when they was getting into our song, Jazzy Sensation. So getting a nice, good touch of feeling of everybody digging the Jazzy 5 song that we had out there. And then once we came with Planet Rock, they just took off to a whole different level with the electro-funk sound of hip-hop.
Yeah, how did you come about with this electro sound? What inspired you to come up with, you know, to mix electro with hip-hop, basically?
Yeah, well, I was always playing on music of Kraftwerk, Gary Numan, Yellow Magic Orchestra, Dick Hyman at my hip-hop parties. So when it came to make a really bizarre-type song, I took certain hip-hop grooves that we used to play and mixed it with the Kraftwerk numbers and Transship Express and Captain Sky, Super Sperm, and The Mexican by Bay Roof. And that's what's the basis of Planet Rock today.
Right. So can you take us through the Planet Rock creation from inception to, you know, when it blows? So how did you start in the studio? What kind of instrument did you use? Where did you get those instruments? Let's get granular on this one.
Well, it started with me and Tom Silverman, who was just starting on Tommy Boy Records, but he was dealing with the newsletters and stuff that he was having at the time. And we was at his house, his father's house. And we just was coming up with some grooves for Planet Rock. And he was laying down the little basses with little drum machines and things like that. Then later on, when I met John Roby and Arthur Baker, then that's when it got to more of the heavy science added to it with the 808s and all that sound. But it started with me and Tommy Boy, and then also coming with the Fairlight. He was one of the first people that had a Fairlight, along with the guy that made Star Wars. There was only two there at that time that had Fairlights. This what we did the scratching on for looking for the perfect beat. So it all started with me and Tom, you know, coming with this idea I gave to Tom Silverman and try to go to his place and try to come up with the creation of it. And that's when I started adding all that other rules to it, Then I started working with Arthur Baker. Then I introduced John Roby to Arthur Baker and them, and the rest is history with my group, Sonic Force.
Right. So, but when you did it, did you know it would be so big and so iconic until this day?
No. What I was trying to do was please my punk rock audience along with my hip hop audience and clash them together, like what we was doing when we made mash mixes of songs, DJ mixes for the party. So I was trying to bring those two together, and it worked. And then it just took off and started grabbing all the other type of cultural people from around the world. And, you know, suddenly started seeing the Asians into it and other Europeans into it and other people from different cultural backgrounds. And all the ones that follow Kraftwerk started getting into it, and the punk rockers and the new wavers. So that was a good feeling, because that's what I was trying to grab at first. And seeing all them different so-called people from different nationalities digging our song, that was great. And still digging it to this day.
Absolutely. But how did the... Because obviously back then there was no internet, you know, it was like... How did the track even travel this far and kind of this fast, you know?
Well, that comes to the record labels that had their little business set around the world with different type of companies they was gonna work with. If you're independent, working with another independent in another country, and who's gonna pick it up for the next country, and working with your publishing company and working with the labels. And so it had a lot to do with the other people that was at the on the staff of the labels that usually don't get credit by a lot of people. You know, I give credit to all those people that work hard without no internet and all that at the time. These people did a great job how they used to push music back in the day. Some say that, you know, they had payola at some of these stations. Who knows? But they all did a vicious job to make things happen.
So you're saying you're happy with how record labels worked your track, actually?
I like the way they worked it, but then you also had your problems with record labels trying to get your business in order, or getting your funds and getting your stuff that's due to you. So there's one part is good, but if you're not on top of the law and your contracts and what you signed, then you could get taken out there, like many groups did from the 50s and the 60s and the 30s and the 40s.
Right, absolutely. So did this particular track help spread the movement even faster in terms of, you know, the hip-hop movement, do you think?
Oh, yes. It's the basic five songs that always will be played forever and ever. And that's like Planet Rock, The Message by Grandmaster Flash, The Furious Five, The Breaks by Curtis Blow, Rapper's Delight by Sugar Hill Gang or Eighth Wonder. And, you know, these songs were those bases, like four or five songs would always be, you know, played over and over again, history and remix and so many different times, because those was classic, you know, with those classic eras of hip hop songs. And you got your other ones that came on after, like Dougie Fresh, The Show, and Eric B and Rakim. I know you got Soul. It's always that particular song in a different era of time that always grab everybody that. And then a lot of other groups are doing the same style until somebody comes with something else to change the whole style to something else again and again and again. And then some stuff repeat itself. It goes around in circles. One minute could be about the electric funk, then it goes to another style of hip-hop sound, and it comes back to another sound, then it comes back to the Miami bass sound, and it goes back to another style, then it comes back to the screw sound, then it goes back and comes back to the Rio funk sound. So It just keep going. And that's what makes the music beautiful. When you have DJs that play all styles of music and not get caught up in a pot tie of I'm just a house DJ, I'm just a hip-hop DJ, I'm just a reggae DJ. And that's what I liked about Radio Nova and Europe One at that time, when they was playing all the different styles of music.
It definitely was something back then. Nova was definitely something, yeah. Until this day, we know that and we respect that. Now that, you know, you had your track spreading across the world, what was your mentality in terms of, did you think you needed another hit and another hit and another hit, or it was just, you know, we have this track, which is, you know, super mad. Everyone loves it. Let's push it as much as we can and let's spread the word even more.
Yeah, I never worry about hits. I make music. I'm like Prince. I just make music that I feel is good for people to dance. And what I might want to hear when I'm on the dance floor. So, I let the companies worry about what they think going to make a hit. Because, you know, the companies used to think I was crazy anyway. Because one minute I could be making straight up hip hop. The next thing I'm making some wild techno. The next thing I might make a straight up rock record. So they didn't know how to handle me. So that's why I became so many different groups at one time. So you had, you know, BAM and Sonic Force, Shango, Time Zone, and all these other groups that I had under different names, working with different people. And that's why I split off when I started working with the French label Celluloid Records, which was giving me more freedom to do more wilder music. And thus became the life of Time Zone and Shango and all those type of groups.
Yeah, and you made an interesting point a bit earlier. You said, you know, the sound is always changing and evolving. This is absolutely the force of hip hop and why it's today, you know, the world's number one genre, right?
Well, some say it's the number one, but the way looking at to me, the way these are events going around the world, it seems like the house and electro, EDM and all is pulling them crazy super crowds. But hip hop to me is always going to be a powerful force to be reckoned with. But you know, that's up to how industry make things happen. One minute they could tell you, oh, hip hop's the number one, it's all over the world. Next thing they tell you, there's an EDM and techno, and next thing is all about house music. And so they play around with all that, you know, making the different categories and making people think it's all about what certain music at the time that they're trying to push.
Right, but I'm sure you ain't mad at that because you love both. You love hip hop and you love electro.
I love all the music. I love all the music. I'm not stuck in no one field of music. I could go to France and make rye and Arabic funk music with the rye groups and zouk music with Kassav and all them. And I could jump into Africa and make stuff with Femi Kuti and all them with the Afrobeat. And I could go somewhere on Bulgaria and make the Bulgarian reggae type funk that they be making over there. So I love all the different styles of music. You know, you got something that you don't like, but you know, music is music. If you got that vibration, you're going to feel the vibration of the world.
Yeah, and this is why you're the only one who could have come with Planet Rock, right?
Well, I couldn't tell you that.
I'm telling you that. That's incredible. You have, you know, you have all this knowledge, you know, musical knowledge. So let's talk about, you know.
I try to stay humble, brother. I try to stay humble.
Yeah, no, it's the best way to go, right?
Yes, it is. Respect people and enjoy life.
Yes, exactly. Let's talk quickly about you know, the Universal Hip Hop Museum, because I know your time is limited, so.
Yeah, well, the Universal Hip Hop Museum is a museum that's for the world of hip hop culture movement, which Rocky, Cutman LG, Melly Mel, Joe Conso, and Ernie and a couple others got together and started pushing strong to make happen. And now it's starting to take off with the help of Rocky and Brother LG, really pushing strong and getting into the culture and people seeing how it's important to really speak the history of the movement, not just on a New York level, but on a world level. And we need more museums in other places. You know, it ain't gonna have to be just New York. We need one in Paris, we need some in other parts of the world where things was taken off big time, Germany, Africa. Because there's people, so many people is, you know, sleeping on all the different areas that really has success with the hip hop culture and the music. There's a lot of great music out there that people still ain't here today. But thank God for the internet and satellite radio stations playing different styles of music for the people.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now let's finish on a up note. Can you talk about the infinity lessons?
Well, infinity lessons is just knowledge that's infinite. Comes from all over the world. You could take 1 minute, you could be talking about health. Next thing you're talking about UFOs. Next thing you're talking about politics. Next thing you're talking about what is money or lawful money? It could be anything in the world that's infinite. Infinite as the great supreme force, him, her, or itself.
Right. Always elevate is the message, basically.
Yes. Know that we're not alone on this planet. You got to know that there's a universe and universes. So just like when many stuff that I talked way back then in interviews and all that I said would come, it's all in everybody's face now. When they used to think, well, I was crazy and stuff, but now they've seen all the stuff. Everybody told me UFO, aliens, and all the stuff. When I've been telling you that we never was alone in the universe.
That's super interesting. Unfortunately, we don't have time to debate about all this, but what's the future for Kabombada? What's on your plate? What's the project?
Oh, we still got music. Many of our music now is on the internet. We got a new song that's almost off like the Twerkulator by the City Girls. We got one by Femi Nine. It's called The Terminator that's coming out. And, you know, I have other songs, the party song. And if you want to get into something that's online, that you only could get online. So there's a lot of songs that I just keep throwing out for people who just could have and dance. Sometimes we even give drawaways where I just sing with somebody and just draw it out for people to have.
All right. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we conclude this amazing episode of Entourage?
Oh, we just want to let people know, you know, we see a lot of hard times going on right now in La France, in Europe and the world with all this pandemic and all this stuff. People don't give up your hopes. Know that, you know, we still got life to live and to stand for something and respect each other. And always research. Don't let nobody tell you nothing is about this and that or television tell you what you need to be doing. Research before you open your mouth to harm anybody. And show respect to each other as a people and the animals and what's in the seas.
Thank you so much, Afrika Bombada. It was, thank you for everything. Thank you for your time.
Yes, sir. And thank you for what you're doing over there to keep things happening. Because we need to do as much as possible to keep people thinking in peace and respecting each other. Because they really up made the world get crazy evil at a time now. So we're trying to get everybody back into the one. And never forget the great supreme force. I don't care which name you call him, her, it. Because they're trying to seem like they're trying to get everybody to get away from the great name of the that put all this together.
Thank you. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Enjoy.
Nous voilà arrivés à la fin de cet épisode. Si vous y avez trouvé quelques pépites, merci de le partager à tous ceux qui, comme vous, cherchent à exceller. Et bien sûr, pensez à vous abonner et à mettre 5 étoiles. C'est votre contribution qui va aider ce podcast à continuer de vous apporter, toujours et encore, les plus grands architectes qui œuvrent depuis la face cachée du succès. Moi, c'est Dasset, et je vous retrouve la semaine prochaine pour encore plus de conseils avisés et d'inspiration. Portez-vous bien.